Hello and welcome to the Open Cloud Infrastructure Podcast. I'm your host, Sascha Siegmann, and today is Wednesday, February 15th, 2023, and this is episode 4 with these topics that make this now a longer-lasting podcast than 44% of all podcasts. According to Amplify and Podnews, 44% of podcasts have less than 3 episodes. Only 720,000 podcasts have more than 10 episodes. My next milestone. The topics today. Kelsey says it's okay to run databases on Kubernetes. A cool $1,000 in credits to run Kubernetes for free to learn it. And OpenShift 4.1.2 is out. Kelsey says it's okay to run databases on Kubernetes and something about your LinkedIn profile. I freely admit to it. Once in a while, I check Twitter, this dumpster fire of a train wreck swimming on the Titanic. The last time I did that, some dude that I had blocked for many months showed up in my timeline again. His name is Elon Musk. You may have heard of him. Now, it's a little shocking that he did show up in my timeline, but that's only because his small ego was so bruised by small engagement numbers that he had his team unblock him by everyone. Now imagine my additional shock when I read a tweet that showed up in my timeline from Kelsey Hightower, who's Google's cloud principal developer advocate. He replied to a question from The Sober Coder, by the way, cool handle, Soham Dasgupta. The question was, quote, bust a myth for us, please. Running any sort of database on a Kubernetes instance is a bad idea. I've heard this enough times to actually start believing it. Hashtag MythBusters.
Someone asked me a question earlier today. Can you run databases on Kubernetes? And my answer to that is, of course you can.
On Twitter, he added the following, quote, you can run databases on Kubernetes because fundamentally it's the same as running a database on a VM. The biggest challenge is understanding that rubbing Kubernetes on Postgres won't turn it into Cloud SQL. You can even pin your database on a specific machine in the cluster to ensure the database lands on the same node with the same IP, with the same data volume, kind of like you would do today on VMs. Is deploying a database binary and mounting a volume on a VM really the hard part? Out of the box, that's what Kubernetes brings to the table. The database application must meet Kubernetes halfway and handle things like data replication, backups, etc. All the day two and day three stuff. End quote. That's where Kubernetes operators come in, but I'll save that discussion for another time. And Kelsey tops it off with a shout out to CockroachDB, the database that never dies. You see, CockroachDB, they have figured this out. I think it helps to have redundancy at all the layers, including networking, storage, compute, and the database layer, which should own cluster membership, leader election, data replication across multiple zones or regions, and routing around network partitions. There's some great insight here, and you can even listen into the conversation as he spun up a Twitter space that you can find linked in the show notes or on the podcast website, siegmann.cloud.
So running databases on Kubernetes or not, to me, you can do either one, but for most people, it probably literally doesn't make sense. But your LinkedIn profile gonna look super dope if you pull it off.
So there's that for your LinkedIn profile. You got that going. I think the net result of this is it's a complicated question. So here's a cool $1,000 in credits to run Kubernetes for free to learn it. I don't know about you, but I need, when I learn something, I need to have some sort of a roadmap. I need some overview of the learning material so that I can relate the new material to something that I'm actually already familiar with and organize my white space, meaning all the stuff that I don't know. And with Kubernetes, there's a ton to learn. Recently, I came across this, one such learning roadmap, and I want to share the link with you. You can find the website at devopscube.com/learn-kubernetes-complete-roadmap. And here are some of the things that you can learn by going there. What is the best way to learn Kubernetes? What's new in the latest Kubernetes release? Prerequisites to learn Kubernetes, learn Kubernetes architecture, $1,000 free cloud credits to deploy clusters on Google, AWS, DigitalOcean, Linode, or Vulture. Or you could set up your own cluster with me and follow along. Kubernetes cluster setup, understand kubeconfig files, understand objects and resources, learn about pod and associate resources, ingress and egress controllers, learn end-to-end microservices, application deployment on Kubernetes, learn best practices, and so on. Much more. Head over to the Git repo at github.com slash techiescamp.com/kubernetes-learning-path and check it out. OpenShift 4.1.2 is out, or actually it's OpenShift 4.12, to be honest. So it's now available. This release uses Kubernetes 1.25 with the Creo runtime, which is a lightweight alternative to using Docker as the runtime for Kubernetes. New features, changes, and known issues that pertain to OpenShift Container Platform 4.12 are included in this. Broadly speaking, there are five areas with significant updates: security, upgrade and lifecycle, networking, edge use, and OpenShift on ARM. There are 49 customer requested enhancements delivered with this release, and I want to highlight five new features. OVN Kubernetes is the default network solution now. Beginning with OpenShift 4.12, new clusters will be installed with the OVN Kubernetes Network plugin as the default network plugin across all supported platforms and topologies. All prior OpenShift releases will continue to use OpenShift SDN as the default networking plugin. Next, team upgrades at massive scale with Topology-Aware Lifecycle Manager. Topology-Aware Lifecycle Manager, TALM, allows organizations to manage the deployment and updates of multiple single-node OpenShift clusters. With TALM, administrators control the timing of the updates, the subset of managed clusters to apply the policies to, and the update order of the clusters, among other things. You can now scale control plane nodes automatically in an OpenShift cluster on AWS, just like you would your worker nodes. This operational flexibility is especially useful to tackle growth or a control plane node failure. Previously, you would execute a lengthy procedure to recover a failed control plane and to add new control plane nodes. Hybrid cloud adoption. So if you are a Google Cloud customer, you can now use committed Google Cloud platform spend to purchase and run Red Hat offerings directly through the GCP marketplace. Also, you can use OpenShift Container Platform on additional ARM. OpenShift is now supported on ARM architecture-based Azure installer provisional infrastructure, in addition to AWS Graviton 3-based AWS installer provisioned infrastructure clusters. And you can try OpenShift 4.12 today. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. I appreciate your time, and check back in 2 weeks for another episode of Open Cloud Infrastructure. If you like this show, recommend it to a friend. Follow me on Mastodon as ssiegmann at infosec.exchange. The music in this program is licensed from Audio Jungle. Head over to my YouTube channel, where you can check out the installation videos and how I set up my lab. Hop over to YouTube and find me as @OpenCloudInfrastructure. See you soon.